Welcome to Blind Level Tech. I'm Jonathan Price.
I'm Evan Starnes.
And together, we're bringing you news, tech, and information about blind technologies.
Being blind doesn't mean you have to stop living.
We're going to show you just how possible it is to live the life you want. Why do you think that was?
I think it was actually a processor lag or something. I can't figure out where to actually go change like the actual settings for that interface on the Mac because without like I know how to change the levels and stuff, and I know how to change its sampling rate, but I couldn't figure out if maybe it was using, because I have had problems before where I was using the wrong bit rate on my Zoom H1 recorder, and it made me sound a little higher pitched, which was really weird, and so I had to change that. Yeah, and but goofy. This is weird. Anyway, I don't get it.
Anywho, welcome to Blind Level Tech. This is Jonathan Price and my co-host
Evan Starnes coming to you from an AINC studio.
Hey, there we go. We're finally in the studio and we're on some, if you listened to last week's episode, sorry for the technical glitching that was going on in our recordings. There was just some weird stuff that was going on with my personal internet. So I believe we got that figured out. So I think we're good to go. You know, tech issues, there's always going to be problems. You know, technology comes with issues. So yeah, it's great. And that's why we do this. We love technology. We love bringing you news and information. So Evan, how was your week so far?
My week so far has been pretty good. Just your average work week. I had a really good spring break, and I ended up going out to Arizona, which I'd never been to before, and checking out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. I don't have any audio from it, but I'll see if I can salvage some, but checking out the Musical Instrument Museum, which is really cool. And, it was a good time. I went out with my buddy. We went, same buddy I went to South Dakota with last summer, and, we drove all the way out there in his Lexus and listened to a bunch of CDs, and it was just a really good time, a great way to spend my spring break.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned listening to CDs, and I remember, you know, when I was a kid, or even, you know, when we had CDs and records for that matter, but, you know, you would get a CD or a record and you would just sit and listen to it. You wouldn't do any house chores. You wouldn't do anything else. You would just sit and listen to an album and listen to the entire thing, because usually the album was like a story, or it would have like an overarching theme, or, you know, whatever. But so long are those days that, you know, you don't really do that anymore. You get little singles and you get EPs and you get, like, oh, here's my newest song. And, you know, I miss those, like, you know, big albums. And so, you know, it's just cool to listen to a CD all the way through.
I still do.
I do too. Every once in a while, I'll listen to an older CD and just listen to the whole thing all the way through.
I'm a firm believer in having a digital copy of an album, or a physical copy of an album if I like it enough.
Nice. Yeah. I do that with records. So I collect, I really love vinyls, and I do a lot more of like soundtracks.
Yeah.
Movie scores for records. I don't know. There's just something so rich a vinyl that it just sounds different.
Yeah. We both got collections, it looks like.
Yeah. So we'll have to collaborate and swap records and swap record stories. So, very interesting. I have a collection of original Leonard Bernstein recordings from Vertigo and Tacti. And yeah, so it's pretty cool. Anyhoodle. So I wanted to run this article by you, and Evan has no idea what I'm getting ready to read. So this could be very interesting. I may have to edit this out. So if you hear a just a pause and nothing makes sense, then that's why. No, I'm just kidding. So Microsoft, they did their what's called Microsoft Ability Summit. Are you familiar with this, Evan?
I'm familiar with it. I've never heard one or been to one, but yeah, it's kind of their accessibility thing that they do. Yeah.
So they just revealed this kind of cool thing for developers where they're calling it an accessibility assistant for content creators. And what it does is it monitors what they are building in apps or programs. And this says specifically, the assistant will offer suggestions on how to prevent and correct accessibility issues, along with what Microsoft calls better defaults, quote unquote, and quote, real-time remediation. The assistant follows an accessibility checker in Visual Studio. On a similar note, Microsoft has released a guidebook PDF to people designing products with cognitive diversity in mind. So I thought that was really cool. That's going to be a huge thing for, you know, Microsoft 360, or formerly known as Office. I think that'll be really beneficial because, you know, when they have a seeing AI, they've got that Azure platform. They're getting ready to roll out some pretty interesting features. But Evan, what do you think of that initially? What comes to your mind?
I think it's interesting because when it comes to making an app, accessibility is key. And just to make things fully accessible, we were talking about this last week. Well, yeah, yesterday in this case. We were talking about this a while ago, and it's key to build something accessibly from the ground up. Like, you just put accessibility in mind. And there's actually a I don't know if it was a project or if it was like a thing, but it was called the Born Accessible. I don't know if it was the Born Accessible project, but it was basically like that entire concept. So I don't really have any concerns. In fact, I am actually very happy about that because any developer that builds like apps or sites or anything that uses Visual Studio, it's more likely to be guaranteed accessible. And especially if that little AI thing is just kind of, you know, telling them like, hey, this is what's wrong with it. A lot of people we blind people are a very, very small percentile of the population. And a lot of people don't even know what accessibility means and what makes something usable with a screen reader, usable with switches, which are those big buttons for people that have like motor issues or large print, you know, just all of it. And so that I think is cool. I don't know what it's going to do with accessibility testing because accessibility testing, is a big field and it pays really well right now. And I really hope that there's some longevity for it because, I mean, it has the potential to replace some of those testers. And I don't think it really, really entirely will. I think it's a good idea to have it there to make sure everything's accessible, but then put it through a person, like an actual user of the software, to make sure it's 100% good because AI ain't perfect.
You know, when people think of accessibility, like to your point, they usually think of like handicap, quadriplegic, like wheelchair, so that's what they think of accessibility, but there's a whole other spectrum of blindness, hard of hearing, deaf, deaf blind, you know, and there's a lot of other accessibility, you know, features that need to go in from, you know, not even just a software development or a hardware development, but we're talking also from the aspect of, you know, accessibility tech for building buildings and homes and, you know, different things of that nature. So I think this could go a really long way. You know, Google is obviously doing a bunch of their own AI stuff and accessibility stuff. So I think that could be rather interesting. So I just wanted to get that thought from you, and well done on that. I think it'll be interesting to see how this develops over the next three to six months.
Yeah, interesting to see what happens to Seeing AI because I use that app, and they have a lot of features from a feature that allows you to use, if you have an iPhone 12 Pro or newer, the LiDAR capability to see what's around you, and you can actually create like an indoor route and navigate it. It's not great, but it works. So I really want to see where that goes.
Yep, absolutely. I saw a really cool demonstration of that when a guy was using it in an office building to help his friend get to a printer. So that was kind of cool. It was on a completely different level. So anyway, cool. So let's dive into this week's topic. This week, we're talking about watches and other wearables. And we both have the Apple Watch. I have the Apple Watch 7. What, Evan, do you have?
I have the Apple Watch 6.
Cool. And so different generations, but still Apple Watches. They both work very, very well. When we talk about watches, what are some of the benefits from a accessibility standpoint of wearing a watch?
It's a lot easier to get access to information on, well, let's use the Apple Watch for an example, on your iPhone, because they have a lot of little extensions that work with certain applications. So let's say, you know, I'm at a bus stop and I want to check when the next bus is going to be there. They have a the Transit app, which is an app where you can see like bus routes, you can plan, you can see what buses to take to get to your destination. And what's cool is I can pull all that information up on my watch and see when the next bus is coming. And I can, you know, just kind of look at it there without having to pull my phone out. You can also use the watch to make like voice recordings and audio recordings, and they're really good too. So, you know, if you wanted to discreetly record like a conference or something like that, it's more than adequate. And, you know, since it's on your wrist and your wrist is out of your pocket, you know, it's a lot easier to just get better quality recordings from that. Easier to message, like, you know, you have quick responses on pretty much both Apple Watch and Samsung and Google's watches. You know, you have just a quick little response if you need to reply to some message. You need to speakerphone calls with them. And then, of course, there's the obvious of, you know, exercise and activity and sleep tracking, which all of the major smartwatches have now.
Right.
And those are beneficial. Like, when I go to the gym, it's nice to be able to actually see how many calories I've burned or how far I've ran on the treadmill. And some of the workout equipment even works with Apple and Samsung's watches, which is really cool. So just a lot more information and an easier access to it.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's really only two players in my mind for, you know, the best watches, and that would be like the Samsung, the Galaxy watches. I think they have the new 5 out and the 5 Pro. And then you have the Apple Watch Ultra and the Apple Watch 8, which are kind of the, and in my mind, or in what I've seen, the biggest, difference between the two is the health features that Apple rolls out with their, you know, their monitoring levels, their blood O2 levels, a lot of that kind of stuff is very intriguing to me. So let me just read this real quick. Some of these features of the Apple Watch 8. So it does run on Watch OS 9. It is compatibility, you know, with iOS. So if you have your
iPhone,
Apple, your iPhone, your iPad, any computer, I don't think you can hand off between computer and watch, but I know you can do.
You can unlock your iMessage computer with a watch.
Right. Which is really cool. That's great.
I use that.
Onboard storage is about 32 gigabytes for the Apple Watch 8, battery about 18 hours, depending on how much you use it. It is a wireless charging, water resistant to fit about 50 meters. You can do Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, NFC, LTE, which is cell phone compatibility. So you can have your own dedicated line for your watch, which is really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of the best reasons to get an Apple Watch would be, for me, the useful temperature sensors. So if you're doing, it does like body heat, it just monitors like your blood oxygen level, your heart rate, which a lot of these devices do heart rate monitoring, but this one will connect to your health card in your app, which can be really beneficial if you are going to an emergency room or you're incapacitated in some way. They're able to unlock your phone and get some of that necessary health information, which, you know, It's really, really good.
It could be a lifesaver, actually. Yeah,
it absolutely can be. And the difference is really with the Apple Watch Ultra and the 8 is the battery is a lot bigger. So with the Apple Watch Ultra, you get about 36 hours versus the 18 hours. And then you also have a water resistance to 100 meters versus 50. So, I mean, those are the biggest differences that I've seen. So, Evan, you have an Apple Watch. Tell me some of the things that you enjoy about your watch, and are you planning on upgrading your device?
Yeah, absolutely. And I can actually speak for the Apple Watch Ultra, too, because I've seen... Well, my girlfriend has one, so I own the Apple Watch Series 6, and like I said, and it's been a really good performer. And the reason I'm not planning on upgrading anytime soon, because really the only things that they've really changed, they have added some body temperature sensors in the Series 8, but those are really only for like pregnancy, like tracking and
right.
And that's what they use it for. I think it can tell you if you're running a fever, but I don't think it's enabled yet. But that would be useful eventually. And they did in the Series 7, they added an on-screen keyboard. So if you're typing like a – you know, if you need to type like a word, or if you need to type a password in an app, it used to be with – all the way up to the Series 6, you used to have to draw everything out with Scribble – with this thing called Scribble. And it was really annoying because you had to know print. And I don't know print very well as a blind guy. So that's kind of a reason I could upgrade. But other than that, you get my watch, the Series 6, has the same amount of storage, the same battery life, same design, same good sounding speaker and everything, same charging. It's pretty much, I feel like it's not been worth an upgrade yet. And I have the non-cellular, they call it the GPS version of the Apple Watch. So it just works with my iPhone. And but yeah, I'm not planning. I might upgrade to the Apple Watch Ultra, maybe, because I don't need one, but it's cool and it's tech. And but those bad boys run about $800. But
yeah, they do. They're expensive.
The Ultra, what's cool about it is it has a sapphire display. So that thing, the screen of mine is made out of glass, and it's kind of scratches and cracks, you know, if I bang it into doors or whatever. This thing, no matter, it just is built like a tank, and it is like quite a bit thicker and heavier, and it can do things like dive tracking. So it'll tell you how far you've, you know, you dove into the water, and it'll tell you your like distance and your time, which is really cool. It has two speakers on it, so a lot louder. So if I'm outside and I need to talk on the, you know, and I need to hear voiceover or talk on a speakerphone, it'll sound a lot better. And it does. I've heard him. It also has an action button, which is really cool. So the Apple Watch has two buttons by default. You have the like two stock buttons. You have the crown, which is the thing that spins around, and that's a button. And then you have another like elongated button, which you can use for Apple Pay, powering the watch. And if you hold it down, you can activate an emergency SOS, which will call 911. And
which my son has done on more than one occasion.
Yeah. And you'll know you're doing it because it'll make this little whoop, and it's kind of like, you know, it's going to happen. So you can't miss it. But they've added an action button now, which is really cool, because let's say I'm all of a sudden I just spontaneously decide I want to go on an outdoor walk. I can map that button to anything I want. I could skip tracks with it. I could start a workout with it. And if you hold that button down, it'll also activate another Apple Watch Ultra specific feature, which is a siren. And it's a really loud kind of piercy sound. And it's the sound engineers designed that sound to travel. And it'll also do like a little SOS beep too. So like if you're a hiker, or if you're an outdoorsy person or a sporty person, this might be the watch for you, because you know, if you're stuck somewhere, people will hear that. Also, there is no non-cellular version of the Apple Watch Ultra. They are all cellular.
Right. They're all cellular. Yep. I fully plan on upgrading to the Ultra just because I do a lot of camping, a lot of hiking and hunting in the fall. And so I love the outdoors and
absolutely. You
know, being super rugged on it and being difficult on it, I fully anticipate on upgrading when I can. It's just one of those things that my watch, my Series 7 is already shot. Just because of how rough I am on it. And yeah, it still has the glass. And so it's scratched and, you know, I just beat it up like crazy. So yeah, I'm excited to be able to upgrade. It'll be really interesting when that does come out. I want to shift gears really quickly to the Galaxy
Watch 5.
Galaxy Watch 5. Thank you. Yes, yes, yes. So a couple of specs about that is the Galaxy Watch 5. Onboard storage is 16 gigs versus the Apple Watch 32. Battery duration is about a day, so between 20, 24 hours, 25 hours, depending on usage. The charging method is a Qi wireless charging system. So it's not that Apple exclusive clip-on kind of battery charging. It's a dual-core processor, 1.18 gigahertz, Cortex A55 chip. Which is nice. OS operating system is the
Wear OS.
Yep. Compatibility with Android. This is the thing. This is a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about the environments for, you know, Apple versus Android. This is where you have to really think about which direction you're going to go. Because if you get like a Samsung wearable, it's not necessarily pairable with your iPhone. So, at least not that I've seen. Have you seen something else?
Yeah, it used to be. You actually used to be able to get the Galaxy Watch app on your iPhone, and it actually was semi-compatible. Okay. But that might have changed because of Wear OS.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Samsung and Apple have, you know, they have a love-hate relationship with each other. You know, Apple used to use all the Samsung screens, and then, you know, legal happened. And they weren't anymore. And so I don't know if they're still making screens from if Samsung is making Apple screens and that kind of stuff. But
they're using LG sometimes, actually.
Yeah. Yep. And then okay. So that's the Samsung Galaxy Watch 5. And you had a five, right?
No, I didn't have a five. I had the original Galaxy Watch. And so
that's right.
The Galaxy Watch is quite different looking from the Apple Watch. I actually like its look. It's kind of more of a utilitarian look.
It's more
look.
Circular.
Yeah, it's very circular. And it looks like a watch, like what you'd think of.
Right.
What's cool about it is the, especially the Pro, they have a, instead of a crown, there's a rotating bezel that you can spin around and it lets you scroll through interfaces. You know, you can scroll through apps. Now, the storage, 16 versus 32, why might that be important? Well, all it really depends on is how much content you need on your watch, how many apps. You can put music on the watch. You can put audiobooks on it. You can record with it. Recording quality on the Galaxy Watch is not as good, though.
Oh, I didn't know. No, I didn't know that. The biggest thing for me, though, is the battery duration. For the Pro, you get 3 days. Just about on the 44 millimeter. They do come in a couple of different sizes. They come in a 40 millimeter and a 44 millimeter. So you get a little bit less with the 40 millimeter just because of the size difference. But 3 days of battery life without charging on that's a
lot.
Pretty impressive. I don't care who you are. That's impressive.
I had the original Galaxy Watch, the 44 millimeter, and I actually got like 4 or 5 days and I could sleep with it and it had accurate sleep charging or sleep tracking. And the accessibility on it wasn't great at the time. And that was because it was running something called Tizen, which is Samsung's OS that runs on their TVs now. But you couldn't use a lot of like the exercise tracking and stuff. And it was kind of mess. That's kind of why I switched to the Apple Watch. But now, thanks to Wear OS, you get Google's TalkBack screen reader and everything's accessible on it. And so you'll have just as good of an experience on the Android side of things as you would on the iOS side of things. And it really is just dependent on your preferences.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And all of these you can get on Amazon, Walmart, Best Buy, Apple, you can get at the Apple Store.
I think you can get the Galaxy Watches at Target too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And the Galaxy Watch uses a cradle charging too. So the Apple Watch, there's two cool things, okay, that I need to really emphasize for people that might sell them or not. Go for it. The Apple Watch, the charger is actually really cute. You can get, you know, other chargers, like I got a little cradle for mine, but it's like a little thing about the size of a quarter in diameter, and it just kind of, you know, magnetizes the back of the watch and makes this cute little like ding when it charges, which is really cool. And the Galaxy, you can't charge it from your phone though, which is sad. The Galaxy Watch has a little cradle though that you set the watch in. It's this little round thing and you can set it on a nightstand or whatever, and it will charge your watch pretty quickly. But if you have a Samsung phone or a phone that supports reverse wireless charging, you can actually stick your watch to the back of your phone and it will charge your watch, and is really cool.
Yep, I agree. Yeah, that's a super handy feature. So you can also get some of those features I've seen on like those external chargers. So if you have like a battery pack charger, they are also coming out with that charging capability as well.
Wireless charging.
So I have a solar charger, and the new one of the one that I currently have does have that that wireless charging feature on it. So that's pretty cool.
Yes, absolutely.
That'll eliminate some cables when I'm out in the backcountry. So that'll be good. The last watch, and this is kind of a newer one that's hit the market. Where is it?
It's the Google Pixel Watch.
Pixel. Yeah. Google Pixel Watch, which is kind of cool. Compatibility with Android 8.0 or higher, where it's a Wear Watch OS 3.5, which is the same operating system as the
Galaxy Watch. Exactly.
Samsung Galaxy. Battery life is 24 hours. So about a day. Onboard storage is about 32 gigabytes. Displays about an inch and a quarter OLED, 1.2 inches OLED. So it's an okay watch. I haven't tested it. It is a more rounded traditional watch style than it is like the Apple Watch. So
it's very thin. It's basically Google's answer to the Apple Watch. So it's that same kind of. When it comes to the standard Apple Watches, it's that same kind of curvy shape, but it's round and it does have a digital crown. It's a little smaller than the Apple Watch's digital crown, but you still get talkback and it has a speaker and you can do Apple Watch-esque things. I actually want to get one for testing eventually, and I probably will, but I'll update you guys on it when I get one.
The only thing this doesn't have is it doesn't have blood oxygen sensing just yet. They're probably going to roll that out on a larger display model. So that'll be interesting. There's a couple of other display watches. There's the Tick Watch, the E3. I don't know if you know anything about that.
Yeah, I want to emphasize, you kind of want to avoid, like when you are getting a smartwatch, if you want to stray away from Apple, Samsung, or Google, if you're blind, be careful what you're buying, because a lot of smartwatches don't have a speaker, and you might end up. I had this happen before the Galaxy. Before the Galaxy Watch, they had the Samsung Gear watches, and the original the Gear S2 that I had, the non-cellular version didn't have a speaker, so I couldn't use the damn thing, and it sucked.
Right.
So just be careful. To
add on to that, I mean, you have to think about, if you have companies that are developing watches, they may not have the R&D to invest into the accessibility features that, like, say, Apple and Google and Samsung do, because, you know, they have whole departments dedicated to accessibility. So, you know, buyer beware of, you know, cheaper, lower tech options in your watches, just because, you know, if you're in an emergency situation and you need a watch, or you need to be able to call with your watch or something like that, and you don't have a phone, you know, I would just recommend going with Samsung or Apple, or even the Google
Pixel Watch.
Yeah. So As we wrap up, as we land this bird, any final words, or what is your ultimate recommendation for getting a watch?
My ultimate recommendation is, if you're an Android user, I highly recommend the Galaxy Watch, because it does have that blood oxygen tracking. It has really good sleep tracking, really good heart rate tracking, better battery life. And the Pixel Watch, you know, it's in its infancy. You know, this is the original Pixel Watch. It's not bad. It's actually a really nice, like, watch. So if you have a Google Pixel, or, you know, you're feeling kind of game, maybe give it a try too. But my main recommendation is, and will definitely always be, the Galaxy Watch for Android. If you're an Apple user and you want a watch, seriously, get an Apple Watch. You don't, if the Series 8s are around $400, if you actually want a cheaper watch, they did come out with the SE3, I believe, or the SE2. SE2. So that's a cheaper version of the Apple Watch. It still has the heart rate tracking. It does not have the Apple Watch Series 8. Actually, all the way from the Series 4, they have a feature where if you have atrial fibrillation, it can take your electrocardiogram, and it's medical grade, so it can actually, like, measure your heart health.
Right. Yep.
And if you don't need that, if you just want your heart rate and sleep tracking, and you don't need, like, the always on display or any of that, you can get an SE, and they're a lot cheaper.
Yeah, sounds good. I'm so far into the Apple ecosystem that there's no way that I'm going to be able to shift out of it anytime soon. So yeah, I definitely recommend the Apple Watch for Apple users. The integration is just incredible. Being able to go from watch to phone and to leave my house without my phone is no longer a scary thing, because I have my wallet on my watch. I have my phone calls, my text messages. I can be contacted regardless of where I am.
Yep.
So that's really beneficial, especially with kids in school and you know, my wife and all the people who need to get a hold of me. So yeah, I can definitely recommend that. The Samsung, they've just been a reliable brand, and you're not going to go wrong with the newer phone or the newer watches. I'm sorry, and you're going to get some good stuff. You get the 1 day full charge, and I mean you're good to go. So,
and that's 1 day with an active lifestyle. Like, if you're not as active, if you're not using the exercise tracking, you're probably going to get even more out of that.
And it probably is a little bit outside of the Apple Watch Ultra. It is probably the most durable of the watches, a little bit lighter weight. But yeah, I think you're not going to really go wrong with either one. The biggest thing is the I know this is a blind tech podcast, but if you like the aesthetic of a round face versus a square face, that's really, in my opinion, the biggest difference, at least cosmetically. So, all right. Well, we are going to land this plane, and I hope you guys had a wonderful week. Evan, can you let them know about our other shows?
Yes, absolutely. So, we actually did have a bit of a name change here, for the topic of the month has now been Navigating Life with Vision Loss. So that is a podcast with our executive director, Kim Wardlow, where she interviews blind and people that work with blind people just about kind of their experiences and tips about anything from whatever the topic is, you know, from working with public transit to cooking in the kitchen to, you know, going to sport, participating in sporting events. Like, there's a lot of cool information out there on that podcast, and there's like hours of content just in that show alone. We also do have Blindsight with Bill Lundgren. If you are struggling mentally, or if you just need some good mental health tips, or you just need, you know, somebody that has had experiences, he is an amazing host. He likes to call himself, and I know I can totally say this, he calls himself the licensed psycho.
yeah.
But yeah, he is a licensed psychotherapist with a show now, and you know, he has a lot of guests from people that have actually had almost near-death experiences because of mental health mm-hmm. to different therapists, yep. whether it be a music therapist or a psychotherapist. Like, that's just a really good show. And he's just honestly, like, it's amazing to watch his growth as a host. Yeah, he's a cool dude. And of course, there's Aftersight, the show that started this whole thing, the reason mm-hmm. we're doing all these podcasts. Aftersight with Penn Street, where she interviews people that have been through vision loss or that have been totally blind since birth, and talks about all of their life experiences, and really does show people that there is life after sight. And it is just, I mean, seriously, it's an amazing show. It's grown a lot. It's had a facelift, a brand new intro since this year. So really good show. And we're getting like closer and closer to having just all these big influential blind figures and just huge, yeah. you know, almost celebrity types. And we've actually had, mm-hmm. we have people like Eric Weinmayer on, which is, that's huge. And then lastly, there's my show, the Volunteer Spotlight. You know, and if you're a volunteer or you're interested in becoming one, or you just want to see what it's like to be a volunteer, we interview our volunteers of the month each and every month, talk about how they got started at AINC, what their experiences have been, if they have any, you know, if they have any, they get to ask us questions, you know, me and the entirety of AINC. Definitely a good show. And it's a half-hour monthly show. And, yeah, I'd definitely give it a listen.
Nice. Yeah. So speaking of, we have a couple of announcements. We had on Aftersight a couple months ago, Diane Schur, and she is going to be doing a concert for benefit for AINC. It is a fundraising concert called, heaven help me.
Concert in the Dark.
Concert in the Dark. Why can I not ever remember that name? Concert in the Dark. And that will be hosted on May 4th at the PBS location downtown Denver. So if you more information will be coming out on that once we release this and make it public to the world so you can buy tickets. There is a very limited supply. So if you have any interest, I would jump on those as soon as they release, and we'll get that information to you once it becomes available. So if you have any questions or comments, concerns, please don't hesitate to email Evan or myself, evan@aincolorado.org, Jonathan, Jonathan, @aincolorado.org. Visit us on the web at aincolorado.org/podcast-guests. If you have any guest suggestions or topics you'd want us to talk about, if you have a question about tech or how to, that's a great place to leave that information. So as we head out, I hope you guys have a fantastic week. Next week, we're going to be talking all about headphones and accessibility around headphones and different types of hearing aids and assisted listening devices. So don't forget to come back next week. All right. For Evan Starnes, AINC, this is BLT. Have a great week.